Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
With a flash, Corvus was in the storeroom at the Purient Pixie. He tumbled into and over the writing desk, collapsing the furniture and toppling to the ground.
That was close.
Are you certain about this, Corvus?
As certain as I've ever been.
So, not really, then.
Corvus and Siloa stood amid a grove of trees. Less ancient, perhaps, than those of Dale Golach, but older still than Imphalion itself. It was a place of power, a power they were about to desecrate and poison for generations to come. Around the perimeter of a rough circle, not a clearing but simply a relatively even growth of trees, 13 men and women sat on the earth, tied securely to unyielding boles. Their begging and pleading had long since run its course, leaving nothing but frightened sobs and quickened breath to break the night's still silence. Criminals, most of them, and soldiers the remainder, people who had chosen a life of violence and known that their deaths might well prove the same. Corvus wiped the sweat from his palms on his dark leathers and woolen coat.
Maybe I'm not ready, but it still needs to be done, doesn't it?
Siloa shrugged.
You know there's no going back after this.
Siloa, there was no going back a long time ago.
Corvus knelt and began striking flint to steel over a loose heap of tinder and twigs.
Have you chosen one?
I have. We only have a few names, and one's as good as another, I suppose.
A tiny ember sputtered, faded, sputtered once more, sending a thin plume of smoke up into the leaves. The forest began to smell of incense.
Begin the chant.
Om Keshuna Bruganan Moktuwesha. Om Keshuna Bruganan Moktuwesha.
And chant she did, her voice taking wing into the nighttime sky, inhuman words and unnatural sounds frightening even the bats and the owls from the air. Three times she circled the fire, each time repeating the chant. As she walked, Corvus raised the iron dagger and slit the throat of one of the bound and once more screaming sacrifices, shaking the blade clean of blood into the faintly cracking flames.
No, Corvus! The name before the power fades!
Kanda! Find me the one called Kanda!
Back in the Purient Pixie, Corvus struggled for what little remained of his dignity and regained his feet before the door slammed open and Losalis charged in, saber drawn, followed by a half a dozen men. The large warrior skidded to a halt, surveying the wreckage around him.
Lord Rabane! Is there a problem?
Does it look like there's a problem? Go find Siloa and Davro. Bring them back here. Now.
Right away, my lord.
And once more Corvus was alone, with a pile of tinder that was once his desk.
Go ahead, Kanda. I'm sure you've got some snide comment to make about all this.
There's not a thing I could say that wouldn't detract from the magic of this moment.
I'm so glad I provide such amusement for you. I wonder if Pekatharos is blessed enough to glean the same enjoyment from Ordris.
That was really unkind, you know that.
What is it between the two of you anyway?
A long and sordid history you don't need to know about. This little squabble's been going on for millennia, Corvus. You're just the most recent lucky sod to get dragged into it.
Corvus, are you all right?
Corvus merely shook his head and waited until Losalis and Davro arrived. Then he took a few steps back, selected one of the larger crates and dragged it over to where his desk had been. Corvus sat in the chair, clasped his hands on the surface before him, and tried his damnedest to pretend he didn't so utterly look the idiot.
So, did you see Ordris?
Oh yes, and Pekatharos.
Davro blinked.
Who?
Ordris's demon.
Now, haven't we talked about that already?
Corvus ripped the heavy helm from his head, slamming it down onto the crate.
He's got every advantage that I do. He's got a demon. He's got his own cadre of allies. He's even got his own Kolban Shi'ar.
Corvus stared directly into Siloa's eyes.
And he knows why I lost at Denethor. He knows what I was after.
Siloa paled.
Corvus.
I know, But he can't know where I've hidden it, so we're safe for the time being.
Would someone be kind enough to explain what we're talking about?
Me too. You never even told me what you were looking for at Denethor.
All right. I think maybe you'd better know all of it.
I'm not certain this is a good idea.
What? Are you afraid someone will try and steal it?
I would.
Of course you would.
Then, Corvus shifted his focus back toward those in the room, who weren't utterly hanging from his neck.
What I'm about to tell you does not leave this room. No one, not your men, your lieutenants, or the priest at your deathbed, hears a whisper of this. Other than Siloa, I've never told another soul.
Corvus's eyes crept across Davro and Losalis both like a spreading frost. Each found himself repressing a shiver.
But what if...
No, nothing drags this out of you, ever. I'll have your oaths, the both of you, or this conversation is over.
I swear. You know to whom.
Corvus nodded at the Dark Warrior.
And you?
I swear, in the name of my ancestors, that I will never repeat what you tell me.
All right. I assume both of you have heard the name Salacrim.
He was a wizard, wasn't he? Fairly powerful.
Fairly? Davro, Salacrian was the most powerful spellworker ever to set foot on the Maker's world. He not only breached the secrets of the Tenth Circle, he mastered it. Salacrian, until the day he died, was the nearest thing to the gods that any mortal-born creature could hope to become.
Siloa spun toward Corvus, her teeth grinding.
This is a horrible mistake, Corvus. It was a bad idea 20 years ago, and it's a bad idea now. You're going to kill us all.
I don't understand. I mean, this Salacrian lived hundreds of years ago, right? He's got to be long dead, so what's the danger?
The danger is his legacy.
What I searched for in those catacombs beneath the streets of Denethor was Salacrian's spellbook. And I found it.
The emptiness of death itself could not have rivaled the silence that fell over the tiny storeroom.
How powerful are these spells?
Ungodly. If the legend is to be believed, and everything I've seen suggests that it should, there are spells in this book capable of wiping out whole cities or enslaving entire populations. Salacrim was reported to have summoned creatures so terrible they make Kanda look like a kitten.
I'm right here.
But you're not a sorcerer. Could you even use these spells?
With the spells in written form, I don't have to be a sorcerer to use them. Assuming one is careful enough, studies them hard enough, and has no small amount of luck, anyone with even the most rudimentary magical knowledge can cast from this book.
But why would Salacrian leave such a thing just lying around?
That's just it. He didn't just leave it lying around. The entire damn thing is written in some unique cipher. Without the key, the book is useless.
Which is why you didn't use it at Denethor. You gambled your entire campaign on this stupid book, and when you couldn't use it, everything fell apart.
And of course, rehashing my old failures is of far greater importance than planning our next step in this campaign.
Corvus, listen!
They paused, each unconsciously holding his breath.
I don't hear a thing.
And then it struck Corvus. He didn't hear anything. The tap room was silent.
Graphic Audio presents Corvus Rebane 1, The Conqueror's Shadow, Part 2, by Ari Marmel. Narrated by Michael John Casey, with performances by Michael John Casey, Laura C. Harris, Colleen Delaney, Chris Gennebach, Eric Messner, Bradley Smith, Matthew Bassett, Ryan Carlo DeLusung, Eric Singdalson, Nick DePinto, Jonathan Church, Marnie Penning, Zeke Alton, Nora Ashrati, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Keith Richards, Richard Rowan, and Todd Schofield. Corvus Rebane 1, The Conqueror's Shadow, Part 2.
As quick as Corvus was, Losalis was faster. Before the Terror of the East took three steps toward the door, his massive lieutenant had nearly ripped the portal from its hinges and dashed out into the common room. The chamber was in shambles. Tables and chairs were strewn about the room, many toppled and some smashed. Puddles of ale, beer, and wine skulked treacherously here and there on the floor, lurking in wait for an unwary foot. Tankards lay overturned, mugs dropped and shattered, and everywhere, twitching erratically on the dusty floorboards or flopping spasmodically across broken tables, lay Corvus's men, their eyes bulged as though the pressure of a mounting storm built up within their skulls, and their tongues protruded, yellowed and swollen, several bloodied or even chewed completely through by gnashing teeth. Siloa quickly surveyed the carnage.
Orthet.
What?
Orthet. It's a rare herb, very dangerous.
Siloa was already moving towards the bar, grabbing a large pitcher and filling it with a cask of milled wine.
Siloa, this is hardly the time.
Corvus, I can save some of these men. I'll need them laid out, made comfortable. They have to be kept warm, and you need to get something between their jaws to keep any more from losing their tongues.
Osalis, go. Bring as many men as you need.
At once, my lord.
Losalis headed to the door.
Losalis, you'll find more in the streets. In small doses, Orthet can stay in the system for hours before it takes effect. Anyone who's drunk in here the past 12 hours is at risk. When you're gathering your men, make sure you bring any more victims here. If I have to go out searching for them, we'll never get to them in time.
Losalis nodded, and he was gone.
Corvus, come here.
Siloa crumbled several kinds of dried grasses into the pitcher.
That bastard was never planning to attack us. This was his plan from the beginning. I'll wager that if we were to search those woods, we'd find he never even used the lumber we heard his men cutting. It was all a bloody distraction.
Corvus, listen. There's another step to this that I need you to handle personally.
That doesn't bode well. What do you need?
Siloa stirred the rapidly thickening concoction with a convenient ladle.
The reason Audrys chose Urthet, I'm sure, is that as far as most people know, there's no antidote. It takes longer for some people than for others, but once you've taken a sufficient dose, it's always fatal.
Corvus felt his blood run cold.
But you can help them, right?
There is a remedy for Urthet, one very few people know about. It involves, among other things, a goodly number of herbs and powders, and not a small touch of magic. But it also requires a small quantity of Orthet itself. The problem is, I don't have any of it.
So then what?
I need you to find anyone in this tavern beyond saving. Anyone who's already dead. I need you to take them into one of the back rooms, and I need you to bring me back their blood. As much of it as you can.
Corvus blanched.
Siloa, I...
Do it, Corvus, or Audrys wins right here and now.
Corvus did it. With the help of several of the mercenaries, several dozen bloated corpses were laid out in the Pixie's main storeroom. And then, after he'd sent the men back to assist the others, Corvus grabbed a knife and several basins and bent to work. He was sweating when he emerged later. He carried a number of bowls, basins, and bottles, stacked precariously and all covered with what spare cloth he could find. Balancing them carefully, Corvus stepped back behind the bar and laid them down beside Siloa.
Is that all? Never mind, it'll have to do. Start adding it to the mixture.
Siloa gestured toward a number of bottles, filled perhaps halfway with the thick substance she'd concocted.
No more than 2 spoonfuls per bottle, though.
If the men knew what was going into this cure of yours, we'd never get them to drink it.
That's why we're not telling them, Corvus. We may have to force-feed them.
Siloa, should we give this stuff to the healthy soldiers as well? Sort of a precaution in case they're poisoned later on.
Not a good idea, Corvus. This stuff we're making counteracts Orthet, but it's also extremely toxic in its own right.
Corvus froze.
What? But then what's the antidote for this?
Pure Orthet, of course.
You mean...
I mean that what I'm making here will cure anyone already poisoned, but it'd probably kill anyone else.
In the end, only about 200 of Corvus's men died, though more than 4 times that number had fallen victim to the deadly herb. Several of Losalis's most trusted men were scouring the town, searching both for the perpetrators of this attack and for any further victims. The tavern was full of men laid out side by side and head to toe, wrapped in blankets, but most would eventually recover. Fairly near exhaustion, Corvus leaned with both hands on the bar, staring grimly out over the new carpeting of living flesh.
How long would they be sick?
Siloa shook her head, collapsing onto one of the stools across the bar from Corvus. Her hair hung down in listless tangles, and she was splattered with the blood several patients spat on her in their agonized throes.
I can't say. If the stronger men only got a moderate dose, they'll probably sleep off most of the after effects by tomorrow evening. Others may take as long as 3 or 4 days, and that's just taking the poison itself into account. More than a few of the men injured themselves during their convulsions, broke bones, or bit their own tongues off. If you're asking me how soon we can be ready to move or fight at full strength, I'd say probably 5 days, maybe a week.
Damnation.
Can we stand up to an attack now? A fifth of our soldiers are down.
Aldrus won't attack us. These are mercenaries, Siloa. If the bastard had actually managed to kill 1,000 of them, we'd probably have lost twice that many to desertion. Fighting and dying in battle is one thing to these men, but falling to poison,
Corvus shook his head.
As far as Aldrus knows, I don't have enough of an army left to be any threat to him. He's just going to go around Vorongar and continue on his merry way. And there's not a damn thing I can do to stop him.
But you still have your army, Corvus. And weren't you telling me earlier that the larger the force, the slower it moves? We can catch him if we have to.
It's not quite that simple, Siloa. Besides, at the moment, I'm not sure what we'd do if we did catch him. But you're right, it's not over. We both need to get some sleep, first and foremost. Then we need to meet with Davro and Losalis again. We've got to decide our next move. And I don't particularly care for our options.
Though Corvus slept deeply, the following morning didn't find him well rested. The blackened bone armor grew heavier every time he donned it, and the pendant around his neck weighed him down, a stone around his soul. Corvus, Losalis, Davro, and Siloa had gathered in the storeroom.
What we need to know is how Aldrus poisoned the ale in the first place. If we can't figure out how he did it, we can't defend against it if he tries again.
I don't know that there's anything particularly mysterious about it. As many men as we've got here, it wouldn't be too hard for a few outsiders to slip into the crowd. No one here could possibly know everyone by sight.
I don't think so, Losalis. Aldrus wouldn't risk letting a human agent fall into our hands. I've got ways of getting information from them that they won't be able to resist. No, Aldrus has stolen yet another page from my book, it seems. He's got the gnomes working for him.
Ugh, creepy little buggers, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are also nigh undetectable by magic and just a little bit sneakier than a hunting owl when they want to be. It would require pretty much zero effort for one of them to have snuck in here and poisoned the drinks.
Corvus frowned.
Given their other penchants, it's also likely that it was they who killed our missing soldiers.
So, if they're so undetectable, how do we keep this from happening again?
Tedious as it is, we have Siloa, or myself, check over the food and drink stores on a regular basis. Magic may not detect the gnomes, but it should do fine for detecting any contamination of the food.
Speak for yourself, oh fragile one. I don't have the first notion of what might or might not poison you. You're all so damn easy to kill. It's a wonder you don't all keel over dead 2 minutes after the gods spit you out into the world like so much phlegm.
How colorful. I'm sure Siloa can explain to you what to look for.
I can do what?
Later. As it happens, while I don't intend to take any chances, we probably don't have to worry about Aldrus trying this again. It didn't work, and he won't waste any time reusing old tactics. The trick is to figure out what he's going to do next.
He's going after the key.
He's what?
The key. The one to decode that spellbook you were talking about. He's going after it.
How could you possibly know that?
Think strategically. So far, Aldrus has shown a substantial, one might even say impossible, level of knowledge of your previous campaigns. Correct, my lord.
Corvus nodded with a scowl.
He has. The fact that he even knows about the spellbook has me stumped.
However he knows, he knows. I think we have to assume that he also knows about the necessity of the key, yes?
Your logic's getting a little fuzzy there, Losalis. We didn't know about the key until Corvus actually held the book in his hands.
Aldrus knew that Lord Rabane found the book, but didn't ask why it wasn't used at Denethir. That book would have made the difference between victory and defeat. If it were me, I'd have tried to find out from Lord Rabane why he didn't use the book. Unless, of course, I already knew.
It's possible that he simply didn't think I'd tell him.
I suppose it is. Still, I think we have to assume that he knows about the key. if only so that we can plan for the worst.
All right, I'll buy that. But how do we know he hasn't already got a key?
Because he didn't tell Lord Rabane that he had it. If Audrus was serious in trying to talk you over to his side, my lord, he'd surely have enticed you to bring him the book by presenting himself as the only person who could make it work.
Losalas, are you sure you're a warrior and not a politician?
Please, my lord, there are limits.
Corvus began to pace.
It took me years to narrow my research to the point where I was almost sure the book was at Denethor. I couldn't even begin to guess where to find a key.
Unnoticed by the others, Davro pivoted slowly and strode to the nearest corner, staring absently into the dust and cobwebs that he hugged the walls and ceiling. Something was nagging at him.
Who else knows about the spellbook?
If you mean who else has heard of it, the answer is pretty much anyone who has ever read any tome or treatise written about magic. On the other hand, if you want to know who knew where to find the book, or who knows that I have it now, well, everyone in this room, of course, and Audrus. He might have told someone, I suppose, but I don't think it likely.
Corvus shook his head in frustration.
I don't see how anyone else could know, but I don't see how Audrus can possibly know either, so take that for what it's worth.
Siloa smiled bitterly.
Well, so far we've narrowed the possibilities down to anyone. Anyone covers a substantial number of people, Corvus.
My word, but she's helpful, isn't she?
What? You're the only one permitted to be sarcastic.
It's just that most of you aren't very good at it.
Oh, gods!
Everyone jumped and then stared at the ogre. One of Davro's hands rested idly atop the heavy barrel, the forefinger and thumb of the other clasped tightly on the bridge of his nose. His single eye squeezed shut.
Davro? Are you all right?
Well, that depends. If you mean physically, yes, I'm just fine. I am, however, an idiot.
Davro, what is it?
Well, I think someone else knows, Corvus. I'm sorry, I didn't think to mention it before, but it didn't seem all that important at the time. And it was so long ago. There was so much else going on. I didn't...
Never. What happened so long ago? What didn't seem important?
It was right after you left Denethor. We were pulling out, a fighting withdrawal, as it were. And we were holed up in one of the buildings across from the Hall of Meeting, keeping an eye on things, watching for an opportunity to get the hell out. When Duke Lorum and his entourage arrived, and they were wary, but upbeat. At least that's how they all looked when they got into the hall. Maybe half an hour later, though, one of them storms back into the street and she's irked about something. All kinds of rants and curses. She keeps this up for a good 5 minutes, blows up a few nearby piles that was already pretty much rubble, and stalks back inside. I didn't think much of it at the time, but now, oh, I'm not so sure.
Losalas raised a hand.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you say she blew up a few piles of rubble?
I hadn't heard that she had all that much of a temper. For something to anger her that badly, it must have been pretty important.
My lord, I don't mean to be rude, but might you tell me who in the gods' names we're talking about?
I'm sorry, Losalas. We're talking about Rhea Voon, of course. Personal advisor to the regent, His Grace, the Duke Lorum of Tavernes. And also, incidentally, one of the greatest sorcerers alive. Back when we were acquainted, she'd mastered the Seventh Circle at an age most mages are struggling with the Fifth. She's probably achieved the Eighth by now.
Oh, I think we've got enough wizards and witches and sorcerers involved already.
I couldn't agree more, Losalas. Unfortunately, our large friend got me thinking with his useful, if somewhat belated, revelations, and I'm afraid that I don't have any choice anymore.
You think she knew about the book?
It certainly appears that way, doesn't it? Obviously, we weren't doing a great job of keeping it a secret.
Or she didn't have the slightest clue what you were looking for until after you'd left, and just threw her little tantrum when she found the room and figured out what she'd missed.
You know, you may just have a point.
Oh, he acknowledges my humble contribution, the heart swoon.
You don't have a heart, Kanda.
Then why do I swoon?
Kanda suggests that Rhea may not have learned of the book until after I'd left. She may have initially only realized that something important slipped through her fingers.
Corvus frowned darkly.
Not that it really matters when she found out. If anyone in this whole bloody kingdom could dig up that key, it'd be her.
Do we have any reason to believe that Audrus can't figure this out?
I don't think so. We've been assuming that Audrus has access to the same information we do, if not more. I see no reason he couldn't come to the same conclusions.
Then we know where he's going, don't we, my lord? It seems to me that the question now is, what do we do about it?
Unfortunately, as much as I might wish otherwise, I know exactly what to do about it.
Rhea Voon strode through the broken streets of Denethor, but her eyes scarcely saw the damage, her ears barely registering the moans of the injured or the cries of the mourning in despair. For a time, her attentions remained focused on the conversation she and Nathaniel Espa had just held with the young regent. They'd needed to keep a vigilant eye on Lorem, make sure that he had sufficient time to recover before he did something foolish. And she wasn't going to have unlimited time either. When the guilds regrouped, recovered their authority from the regent, and set out to rebuild, that would be the time to make her own move, to see her own dreams bear fruit. She wondered what it was that Corvus Rebane had thought he was doing. Why had he allowed himself to be cornered in this city, scarcely halfway to his goal? And Rhea Voon found herself standing before Denethor's monolithic hall of meeting. With scarcely a glance of acknowledgement, she brushed her way past royal soldiers and guild mercenaries who, hours after Rebane's forces had all but disintegrated and Denethor been retaken, still combed the corridors and rooms of the hall looking for bodies or survivors.
I think there's some live people down here!
A stair that she had long known existed but never had cause to traverse led her ever down to the deepest cellars of the hall. And there even Rhea's granite demeanor cracked, for the hole in the floor was still half-choked with bodies, the floor around it coated in drying blood. She felt a chill run across her back and sensed the presence of a dozen lingering souls. A score of workers stood amid the bodies, their faces pale, arms and torsos drenched in gore. They'd already dug from the tomb of flesh several living survivors, including the infant Braitlin heir, and the odds of finding others grew more feeble by the moment. Nevertheless, Rhea took a few moments to aid them, directing phantom hands to lift the heaviest corpses and phantom ears to listen for the faintest breath or beating heart. Only when she was certain there were no more lives to be saved did she direct her magics on with greater force, clearing herself a path to walk the scorched passages that had been Rebane's ultimate goal. With the aid of a veritable swarm of spells, seeking this way and that, sniffing for any trace of lingering magics, it took her a mere moment to find the iron door, peeled back and flush against the wall like a flattened blossom. It took many minutes more in meditative concentration for those spells to tell Rhea what had once laid upon the web-shrouded table within.
All this time, so close, so damn close. If I had only known.
And still many more minutes for Rhea's sobs of frustration to subside. Rhea Voon rose slowly to her feet and stalked back toward the light above. First, the regent must be informed, for though her instincts screamed at her to keep her discovery a secret, she would obey her sworn duty. But then she would learn why, and what had stopped Rebane within sight of his victory. And no matter what it took, she would be ready when he appeared again. Healer Rolly McCulloch was an easygoing man, soft-hearted and soft-spoken. At 6'6" and nearly 300 pounds, he was dragged into brawls and even duels with unfortunate regularity. His hands, large but dexterous, had been forced to do harm far too frequently. Though one of the strongest men in the household of Edmund, Duke of Lutrinthus, he was known throughout his master's province not as a warrior, but as one of the most skilled physicians ever to walk beneath the eyes of the gods. Today, the famous healer was not in high spirits. He shoved through the crowded hallways of Duke Edmund's estate, pushing through soldiers, dressed both in the white and silver livery of Lutrinthus and in various other hues as well, not the least prevalent of which was the deep blue and red of Braitlin. But even worse was the reason the soldiers were there. Duke Edmund's estate sat just about a mile outside the city of Orthesis, a city currently in the throes of a chaotic evacuation, as a winding worm of human misery was advancing on Pellaphoron. The serpent was coming. Duke Edmund's scouts had come thundering into town a week before, horses lathered and sweating. Ordris's armies had paused for a day or so camped just outside Vorongar, but they'd quickly been on the move again, and they'd reached Tahasen's Cross in less than a day. There they had turned, the scouts reported breathlessly to Sir Tyler, current commander of Duke Edmund's forces, down the northwest fork toward Othesis. Duke Edmund and Sir Tyler knew that they had little chance of defending Othesis against a determined assault. The two men spent the next week arguing, Tyler insisting they move on to Pellaphoron as ordered, Jassian demanding that, with their combined might, they could hold Othesis if only Duke Edmund would return with the bulk of the army. If the town was caught before a decision was made and faced Ordris piecemeal, it would be a slaughter. The healer finally shoved through a main hall, past a guard, and into a much smaller, blessedly emptier corridor. Steadying himself, he shifted a bag of herbs and implements to his other shoulder, ran a hand over his bald pate, and moved at a quicker but more steadier pace down towards the room in which his patient lay. This particular fellow had arrived with Baron Jassian's men, his head bandaged. Although his eyes would occasionally open, he displayed no indication of speech or even self-awareness since his injury. It was yet possible that he might recover, and Raleigh would work to that end as long as the fellow was in his care, but Raleigh didn't hold out much hope. The heavy door creaked alarmingly as the healer pushed his way in. The room reeked of fevered, sour sweat. His patient lay in the sparsely adorned bed, his eyes shut, breathing softly. His face was sallow and gaunt, pale enough to make the wide scar on his brow all but invisible. His beard, formerly a deep red, had gone grey, and his body, once with paunch over muscle common to aging warriors, was a meager shadow of its former girth. Raleigh sat on the down quilt beside the patient and laid his bag on the floor, as had been his practice 3 times a day for over a week. He removed a small vial of a syrupy concoction and held it to the man's lips.
Wake up now. Come on, friend. I need you awake. Wouldn't want you to choke on your medicine, after all.
Raleigh smiled with an ironic grin.
It would sort of defeat the purpose.
Yes, I suppose it would.
Raleigh leaned in closer, trembling slightly.
Can you hear me? Can you understand?
I hear you. What... What day is it?
Sanos and Ventaris, thank you. It's Queen's Day, my friend.
Queen's Day?
Immediately, Raleigh removed from his bag a skin of clear water. With a weak nod of thanks, his patient grabbed it.
Slowly now, not too much at once.
Queen's Day? I've been out a week.
Raleigh smiled sadly.
A bit longer, I fear.
Raleigh placed a comforting hand on the man's arm.
It is Queen's Day, and the 14th day of the month of the Crow.
Raleigh would not have thought it possible, but his patient's face grew even paler.
Has it been that long?
I'm afraid it has. But you will adjust, my friend. You...
The soldier's hand clamped tightly to Raleigh's arm.
I must speak with Baron Jassian. Immediately.
I don't know that you're in any condition for that right now. Perhaps in a few days.
No! No, you don't understand. I know. I know who it is. I know whose army it is.
Of course. Ordris, the serpent. We all...
No! No. Please, you don't understand. It's not Ordris. It's Rebane. Oh, gods. It's Corvus Rebane.
I'm quite positive he's confused.
Raleigh concluded his report before both Baron Jassian and Sir Tyler.
Probably hasn't a notion of what he's saying. Still, he was so insistent and so certain, I thought it best to tell you. It won't do him any harm for you to hear him out, and it might help calm him down, speed his recovery.
Jassian was on his feet.
Take me to him, now.
The three left the confines of Sir Tyler's office, and though Raleigh was ostensibly in the lead, he found himself struggling to keep up with the brown-haired Baron of Braitlin. Sir Tyler looked more the warrior. Nevertheless, Raleigh couldn't help but think Jassian of Braitlin was the more dangerous man. Raleigh poked his head past the creaking door, intending to determine if his charge was asleep, only to be shoved rudely aside to make room for the Baron Jassian. Between the footsteps of the two lords, there could be little doubt the injured man was certainly awake now.
What?
Name and rank, soldier.
Jassian loomed at the foot of the bed. Raleigh opened his mouth to chide the Baron for his callousness, but it proved unnecessary.
Garrus Ilban, Captain, assigned to patrol duty in Cavone.
Cavone? Bit of a trek from Bretman, isn't it, my lord?
Jassian cast the knight a sideways glare and then elected to ignore him entirely.
Your doctor here claims that you have something to report to me.
I do, my lord. We've been deceived. This Ordris, if he even exists, is a cover. Our real enemy is Corvus Rebane.
Jassian's eyes flashed, but his face bore no such awareness.
Captain, you've been unconscious for 3 months. Forgive me if I find your assessment unlikely.
I realize it sounds mad, my lord, but it's the truth. You see, we discovered an ogre camped in the trees just outside of Cavone. We then patrolled the city and found Rebane and a woman coming out of a house. We fought, and he knocked me out. I can only assume that my men got there in time. I doubt Rebane would have let me survive, knowing I'd recognized him, if he'd not had other concerns.
He very nearly didn't let you survive. That you're alive after such a head wound, let alone recovering your faculties, is nothing shy of miraculous. I have to wonder
if... Physician, be silent. If Captain Garrus here requires any attention, you may provide it. Otherwise, keep your lips together.
Makes some amount of sense.
Tyler was staring absently at the bedridden soldier.
Ordris began in Denethor, exactly where Rebane left off. We've reports of a man matching Valestian's description leading some of Ordris's attacks. Maybe this is all some elaborate charade to keep us from guessing the true enemy here.
Why? The bastard's name strikes fear into the hearts of every so-called soldier from here to the Eye of Cavalry and back again. He'd probably crush half the resistance by saying boo. And I'm not sure his ego would permit this sort of subterfuge.
Tyler frowned.
You may have a point. But it all fits so well, I don't think we can just rule it out.
Excuse me. I wonder if I may point out something you worthy gentlemen seem to have overlooked.
I doubt there's anything you could...
I suggest we hear him out, my lord, if only out of courtesy.
Jassian reddened slightly at the rebuke, but nodded.
As I understand it, one of the reasons that Ordris has been as successful as he has is because Duke Loram and the Guildmasters can't quit squabbling long enough to present a united front.
Stupid bastards. They'd rather clutch their privileges to them and die one at a time than risk losing a few of their sovereign rights.
Well, yes, but my lord... What would have happened if someone came to them and said, Corvus Rebane is back?
Raleigh could actually see the understanding dawn on them as they stared incredulously at one another.
The guilds would panic. They'd give Loram full command as fast as they could sign the documents. Rebane would have to face the combined forces of every army worth mentioning all across Imphalion.
Yes. Can't believe I didn't think of that.
Jassian, the thought clearly paining him, nodded to Raleigh.
Thank you.
No charge.
Jassian grinned and began to absently twist the signet of Braitlin on his right ring finger.
Once they hear about this, Loram should find it a lot easier to whip the bastards into line.
Maybe, my lord. But we have no proof. Only the word of an injured soldier who's been down with a head wound for months. I mean no offense to you or your integrity, Captain Garrus, but there are many who won't be convinced on the strength of your report alone.
I understand, sir, but you must convince them.
We'll do what we can, of course, but...
It doesn't matter if it's true. I'm barely half convinced myself. But as long as the Guildmasters think it's true, they'll react as we need them to. It shouldn't be too difficult to whip up a few eyewitnesses if we need them.
Tyler frowned.
My lord, I'm sure that...
And while they're busy assembling their armies, I'll go out and look for Corvus myself.
You'll what?
I'll look for him myself. And when I find him, he'll wish he died in the war 17 years ago. I've waited most of my life for this opportunity, Tyler. I'm bloody well not letting it slip by me now.
And how will you find him, Jassian?
The Baron and the Duke's knight both went for the swords, twisting about, trying to find the intruder. Raleigh stepped to the side of the man on the bed, determined to protect his patient.
Who's that?
A quick sweep of the room detected nothing more menacing than dust on the wardrobe and a large spider crawling across the ceiling.
Show yourself!
Why, my dear Sir Tyler, of course. How rude of me.
The spider dropped, dangling by a thin strand of webbing, and began to spin. The web grew quickly, weaving itself into intricately detailed ornate shapes as it fell. In less than a minute, a life-size full-body portrait of an attractive woman in a leather jerkin hung suspended, perfectly straight from the laboring arachnid. Before their awestruck eyes, the image bulged. Though it had no depth at all, the thickness of a single strand of webbing, it writhed as though a figure moved within. And then it tore, and from the two-dimensional image stepped a dark-haired woman. She was beautiful, if what somewhat more buxom than the current fashion, her bearing regal. She wore a dark leather jerkin and leggings, a red tunic and matching hooded cloak, and an amused smile quivered fleetingly at the corner of her lips.
I pray you'll forgive the theatrics, gentlemen. I'm afraid my sense of style has quite crossed the line into melodrama, one of the dangers inherent in the profession.
Tyler shook his head, as though trying to physically dislodge his confusion.
Who are you?
Do you really have to ask who Rhea Voon is?
The knight's eyes widened as he crashed to one knee.
My lady.
Oh, get up, Tyler. I hold no title. Your genuflection is quite inappropriate.
Rhea smiled, a genuine expression of affection, toward the bed where Raleigh stood beside his nervous patient.
Relax, good healer. If I'd intended you or your charge any harm, do you think you'd ever have known I was here?
I suppose that's true, my lady.
Raleigh forced his arms back down by his sides, a sickly grin growing across his face.
You'd not begrudge a fellow some bit of uneasiness, would you, my lady?
Tentatively, Raleigh's smile grew more genuine. Rhea faced Sir Tyler and the Baron.
Come, my lords. We've matters of some urgency to discuss, and I fear our continued presence would tire this good fellow here. Let us go about our business and permit Raleigh to return to his.
Lorem, Duke of Tabernes and Regent Proper of Emphalion, strode rapidly away from the assembly chamber as courtesy permitted, in the midst of a huge sigh of relief, when a voice called to him from behind.
Your Grace! A word or two, if you've the moments to spare.
God damn it, I thought it was over.
Lorem forced a polite smile before turning to face the newcomer.
Something on your mind, Lord...
Jassian, Your Grace.
Right, of course. The new Baron of Braitlin. I was sorry not to be able to attend your ascension, Lord Jassian. Your cousin had no qualms about giving up his regency.
None he expressed to me, Your Grace.
Delighted to hear it. What was it you wished to talk to me about that couldn't be said in chambers?
Jassian's expression, barely civil to start with, suddenly twisted. He looked less like a man enraged than a child preparing to throw a tantrum.
What in the hell were you thinking, Lorem?
That's still Your Grace to you, Baron.
You gave them everything they demanded, Your Grace. You didn't even try to negotiate with them.
Mesephium needs the guilds thriving at the moment, Baron. You know full well, if you've studied your history, that I'm no great friend of the guild. But if this turns into a mercantile standoff, as they've threatened, well, they're the ones with the resources. They can wait this out a lot longer than the citizens of Emphalion can.
Well, Your Grace, that's just fantastic. In the interim, your tariff exemptions are going to impoverish the smaller provinces. Many of them still haven't fully recovered, you know. Mesephium was never hit directly by the war.
Neither was Braitlin.
You can't shore up the kingdom if you let pieces of it waste away, Your Grace.
It won't come to that, Lord Jassian, I promise.
May lack the power to stop them soon enough. I know that you're not a king, Your Grace, but maybe you need to start acting like one anyway. If you don't find the strength to bring the guilds in line, someone's eventually going to have to do it for you.
Someone like you, perhaps? Are you threatening my position, Lord Jassian?
Of course not. Though I can easily foresee a time where you very well might wish someone like me was wearing the Regent's tabard. No, I meant someone like Corvus Rebane.
What? What do you know about Corvus?
I know, Your Grace, that Rebane came as close to succeeding as he did because we were too weak to stop him. And so long as we remain weak, someone very much like him is sure to try again. I hope that you're able to take control of your own damnation before it happens.
Lorem's face flushed, his jaw gaped. Before he could draw breath to speak, Jassian was gone.
I'm going to assume you heard everything.
Yes. Actually, I was there longer than you were.
Tyler nodded in sudden understanding.
You healed Captain Gaddis, didn't you?
Rhea shrugged.
I helped. I don't know that we need to let Raleigh know, though. Not that I think he'd disapprove, but why complicate the matter?
Why? Why help this man out of so many others?
You know, Jassian, you're a positive sinkhole of paranoia. Does everything have to have ulterior motives?
Yes.
The truth is, my mistrustful Baron, that I didn't particularly have a reason. I was here anyway. Certain individuals with whom I'm acquainted wanted a first-hand assessment of the situation. And I happened to stumble across Raleigh making his rounds. I followed him from idle curiosity, and he led me to Garrus.
Rhea's mouth twisted into a sardonic smile.
This wouldn't be the first time I've done something on a whim, only to learn that it was of no small importance later on. I had no idea when I gave Garrus a nudge that he would deliver such a fascinating little tale.
What about that fascinating little tale? Is it true?
Do I look like an oracle to you, Baron? Even my sight has its limits.
I think we'd better assume that the terror is involved. I abhor swinging at shadows, but it seems we'd be safer preparing for a phantom threat than ignoring a real one.
If Rebane has come back, we're facing a danger far greater than either of you can imagine. I know something of his objectives the last time he attempted this. If he's accomplished now what he was working on then, he may be unstoppable.
No one is unstoppable. If it's Rebane, I'm going to kill him for what he did to...
The Baron of Braitland's fist clenched inside thin black gloves, and his expression gradually melted, the ever-present mask of anger exposing, if only briefly, the widened eyes of a frightened child.
Can you tell me what happened to Tyannan?
Jacian had rarely spoken about his sister in the days after he was pulled, trembling and blood-coated, from the pit of corpses in the Hall of Meeting. After a few months, he never mentioned her at all.
I don't know, Jacian. I'm sorry, but there's no way for me to know.
Rhea wanted to weep when the windows behind his eyes snapped closed.
That's too bad.
Jacian began to pace. Brighter than it had been in 17 years, Rhea's hatred for the man called the Terror of the East flared into incandescence.
There may be a better way. You may not have to hunt him down.
Jacian's soulless eyes locked onto her own, and Tyler raised an eyebrow in question.
What do you mean?
Rhea leaned back in her chair.
If Rebane is still after what he was after, then he's probably figured out that I know about it.
Rhea smiled once more, but it was no longer a friendly expression. It was angry, predatory, and not the house cat's grin, but the tiger's snarl.
People like him, and like me, have ways of learning that sort of thing. That means, Jacian, that sooner or later he's going to come to me.
The Baron's lips warped into a smile to match her own.
Are you certain, Rhea?
As certain as I can be. Nothing's guaranteed, of course, but I think he'll come.
And what then?
Well, good Sir Knight, why don't we talk about what then? I have an idea that might just appeal to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I could just have ladies and people, please.
Sebastian Arcus, Speaker of the Right Honorable Imbalion and Surrounding Merchants and Tradesmen's Guild, might as well have saved his breath. The vaulted chamber of the Merchants Guild meeting hall in Mesephium was a crawling, writhing mass of chaos, currently filled to capacity with guildsmen, merchants, shopkeepers, and businessmen of all stripes.
Ladies and gentlemen!
The meeting went downhill the moment Sebastian's gavel struck the podium. Many of the attendees were furious that Orthesis had been evacuated and left to fall to the serpent's advance.
Ladies and gentlemen, please!
They'd grumbled and complained even more darkly when they'd learned that no concerted effort was underway to save it, thus giving the assembly the rest of the bad news. A final detail emerged that the entire situation with Aldrus might be the work of Corvus Rebane.
Ladies and gentlemen, I implore you!
Finally, Arcus turned toward the individual sitting directly to his left and shrugged sheepishly. In return, he received an icy glower. Then Rhea Voon stepped to the very edge of the dais, gazing down at the pulsing bedlam. She brushed a few strands of hair from her face,
Corum Arum Trochest,
and cast a simple spell under her breath.
Quiet!
Her voice quite literally stunned some of the assembly as it blew past. The chamber fell into a shocked silence.
Thank you. I think it's clear that we're accomplishing nothing of value. I move we adjourn for the day, early as it may be, and take this up in the morning once we've all had time to assimilate the news we've just heard.
Somehow, without actually moving, she managed to briefly cast another glare in Sebastian's direction.
Yes, I second. Motion carried.
Rhea nodded.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, that what the Speaker has told you is rumor and hearsay. There is no proof one way or the other.
Rhea smiled dourly.
When you go and blab this particular gossip like lonely fishwives, you may want to be certain you mentioned that part.
Rhea waited, unmoving as the large crowd, mumbling and whispering furtively, filtered from the hall. Then, her jaw clenched vice, she faced the guildmaster.
You
rat-brained, jaw-wagging idiot. How could you be so stupid?
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? God damn it, Hold. You'll have this entire city in a blind panic.
I'm pretty close to blind panic myself, Rhea. The very idea is terrifying.
And that's exactly why you should have kept your flapping mouth shut about it.
Rhea clenched her fist as she ranted, in part to keep herself from casting anything else she couldn't take back.
I ought to transform you into a radish.
Sebastian blanched.
You wouldn't actually do that, would you?
I don't know. I've never tried it. In your case, it might actually improve your higher brain functions.
Now, Rhea, I am the speaker of this council. Whatever power you may have, I outrank you. And I think I'm due a little...
The bearded merchant tried suddenly to retract turtle-like into his tunic as the sorceress advanced on him, fingers twitching erratically. She stopped only when her nose was inches from his. Her breathing was audible, as was the grinding of her teeth, and her face had gone nearly as red as her gown.
Perhaps I'd best return to my chambers.
That might be the best idea you've had all day.
Only then did Rhea direct her attention to the rest of the High Council, all of whom sat motionless.
Anyone who cares to comment is welcome to take the floor.
As there were no volunteers, Rhea turned and strode out.
Good. I'll see you tomorrow.